32, medium rare. Sunday morning he drove to the Marina Green, not to work out but to make an appearance. DeMirco was easy to find, leaning against the hood of his car, facing Alcatraz, working the phone. The guy was resourceful. He could book lessons, put ads on Craigslist, and scare the shit out of someone, all at the same time. Chris parked, waited for DeMirco to notice him, jogged the first 100 yards of his usual route, and then pulled up fake lame, holding his hamstring. He fake-tested it for a minute and turned around and walked back, shaking out the leg. He got in the car and drove home, passing DeMirco, who was on the trail and off the phone now, glaring at him. After lunch, he drove to China Beach, first making sure he wasn't being followed. It was an odd setting for a public beach and a closely held secret to many native San Franciscans. You were in Seacliff, one of the fanciest neighborhoods in the city, all mansions and manicured sidewalks, and then boom, this beach out of nowhere. China Beach was about a mile on the ocean side of the Golden Gate Bridge, so it was technically the ocean, even though it felt like you were still on the San Francisco Bay side because of the Marin Headlands directly across. Chris spent time at China Beach growing up and had one bad experience. When he was about 10, he was with a friend and the kid's father, and they went too far down the beach looking for tide pools. They weren't paying attention, and the tide came in and pinned them, and they had to scramble part way up the cliff and sit tight. It was getting dark, and luckily a fisherman in a little dinghy spotted them, and they got rescued by the fire department. Today he went back to the same spot where they got stuck. Right now you had about 20 yards of beach between the cliff and the water, and things were relatively tame. He continued a little further down the beach, heading west away from the city toward Land's End, and there was a horseshoe cove that felt pretty private. You couldn't see people or houses or any other part of the beach, and someone would be doing something stupid on the cliff to see you. This had possibilities. There were a couple of large rocks sticking up out of the water, maybe 300 yards away. On a dare once when he was in high school, he swam out there and back from the main beach. The distance wasn't terrible, but the current made you nervous. It was as good a time as any to check in with Meyerhofer. Meyerhofer picked up, but didn't speak. "Oops, my bad," Chris said. "I was trying to reach Brigitte Meyerhofer. Wrong number, though." Meyerhofer hung up. 5 minutes later, Meyerhofer called Chris back. "Not a question of if, pal, just when," he said. "Hey, Steve," Chris said. "Good to hear your voice. What was that again? You're breaking up on me." "I said your number's up. Sorry." "Geez, well, if that's the case, I better take a nap so I'm fresh for Brigitte. Might as well double up, make it count." He could hear Steve breathing through his mouth for about 10 seconds, like he was getting ready to respond, but then he was gone. Chris made mental notes of the last few details at the beach and went back to take an actual nap. Nothing to do with Brigitte, but needing all his energy reserves if it happened tomorrow. For dinner, he went back to New Joe's in North Beach, where he'd taken Bethany that time. He sat at the counter, shot the breeze with the guy next to him who said he grew up in the neighborhood, and put away 2 steak sandwiches, medium rare. Hopefully not the last dinner he'd ever eat. But if it turned out to be, at least go out in relatively classy fashion. Tourist parking. He set the alarm for 6 on Monday, and when he looked out the window, it was raining. Not a battering rain, but a light, steady one. He put on the ocean suit under his sweats and stuffed a backpack with the fins, the goggles, a towel, and the gun. That made him nervous that the gun might somehow go off and shoot him in the back. He thought of trying to jam everything into a briefcase and carrying that instead, since if the thing discharged, he at least could control the direction. But a doofus jogging with a briefcase might get remembered. There were two concerns, actually three. First, that the prick would even show up today. And second, that he would cooperate by tailing him the whole way and not sit on a bench doing business on his phone and waiting for the return trip. Hopefully yesterday's call to Steve would mean DeMirco would be on it. But the flip side was the third concern, that DeMirco might step it up, going from following him around making him uncomfortable to breaking his neck and throwing him in the water. Chris backed out of the garage at 7:30, and when he'd crossed North Point, he saw DeMirco driving behind him, the guy most definitely present. Chris parked at the Marina Green. DeMirco parked one spot away, and Chris strapped on the backpack and started his run. When they reached Chrissy Field, where he was afraid DeMirco might stop and wait, Chris checked over his shoulder, and DeMirco was right there. Chewing gum, furrowed brow, a baseball cap pulled low against the rain, which Chris wished he'd thought of. DeMirco was wearing a tight, stretchy running suit, no obvious sign of a weapon, but you couldn't be sure. A quarter mile from the Golden Gate Bridge was a road off to the left that took you up into the Presidio and through the tourist parking area and into a tunnel that crossed under the bridge. Then you were winding through the Presidio, under normal circumstances enjoying a section of the 49-mile drive, the Pacific Ocean on your right, China Beach 3 miles away. Chris left the jogging trail and got on the road, and DeMirco followed, the rain picking up a bit when they exited the Presidio at 25th Avenue and entered Seacliff. There was a parking area above China Beach and then a cement walkway that went down to it. There was only one car in the parking lot, which likely belonged to the dog walker on the beach with an umbrella who was conveniently headed east, the opposite of where he and DeMirco were going. It being a Monday morning and gray and rainy, the weather no doubt connected to the big surf that was coming, Chris had to admit it wouldn't be set up better than this. Right before he'd left the apartment, he flashed on a scene from one of his favorite movies, Wall Street, where the kid stockbroker says, "Life comes down to a few moments. This is one of them." Now jogging down the path to the beach, the motherfucker in back of him. That was ridiculous. There was no perspective, just a guy to float face down. Chris hit the sand and took off in a sprint to the left. The tide was past peak, but it was still in, and there were places where you had to run through the water. Knowing where he was going helped, and when he got to the cove, he'd put some distance on DeMirco. When DeMirco came around the final corner, Chris had the gun on him. "Hey, man, how you doing?" Chris said. DeMirco put his hands out to the sides, palms up, and said, "Please, Seely, I no hurting nobody." Chris said, "Oh." "This guy, Steven," DeMirco said, "I tell him I watch you. You fucking with his wife, what do you like him to do?" Chris said, "I see." "I gonna do nothing, just like you gonna no use a gun." Saying it like he was getting ready to make a move. Chris said, "You'll need to lay down on your stomach, because if you don't, I'll have to shoot you." Chris locked eyes with DeMirco and nodded. DeMirco smiled and stood there. Chris closed one eye, curled his upper lip, and was about to squeeze the trigger when DeMirco got the message and laid down. "Why are you making this?" DeMirco said. "All I'm doing," Chris said, "I'm asking you to go for a swim." It took the crow out a few seconds. What swim? See those rocks out there? You swim to them. Raise your hand to show me you made it. Turn around, come back. I'll buy you lunch. I can tell you're a nice guy. We'll call it even. And talk about getting me some tennis lessons. So we do that now. Forget about swim. Ha, I have to give you credit, Dim. You sound like me. You don't mind me calling you Dim, do you? A nice ring to it, short for dimwit. However, you have 10 seconds to take everything off and get on the water. Shirt first. 9, 8, Demirko stripped to his briefs before the count expired and stepped into the water. Thank God all he'd had on was a long sleeve shirt and running pants, nothing concealed underneath, though Chris felt through his clothes to make sure as Demirko was adjusting to the water. How is it? Chris said. Please, it's like ice, please. There's an initial jolt, I hear you, but then you get stabilized pretty quick. You've seen those old guys at the Dolphin Club, right? Down by Aquatic Park? They never miss a day. No wetsuit, nothing. Of course, as I think about it, a lot of them are fat, which probably does help. Demirko was into his knees, trying to scoop water onto his upper body. Chris said, good idea, Dim, but unfortunately we've got to get the show on the road. 5, 4, 3. Demirko waded through the white water and got past a couple of waves and sprawled forward and started swimming. It was a combination of dog paddle and freestyle, his face never going in the water, everything out of sync. It occurred to Chris that maybe he wouldn't have to do anything, that the prick might just drown on his own out there. But after watching for a few minutes, it was clear that bad as the guy looked, he was moving slowly but steadily toward the rocks like a determined little pit bull, and from there he chose an option that didn't include a guy waiting for him on the beach with a gun. Chris pulled on the fins and cinched the goggles tight. He hated having to leave the gun in the unlikely event some hapless beachcomber wandered by. The best he could think of was wedging it into his shoe and then piling everything else, including Demirko's clothes, on top. 75 yards out, he hit Demirko the first time. He approached him from underwater and grabbed his right ankle and pulled down. When he let go and came up, Demirko was facing him, treading water, looking confused, then shocked, then terrified. Chris dove and grabbed an ankle with both hands and kicked hard downward, and he had Demirko underwater. Demirko thrashed furiously, and Chris had to release him. Chris hadn't factored in the survival instinct, but he felt he had things under control if he didn't get grabbed or kicked in the head. There wasn't a huge rush. He'd read that cats look like they're playing with rats when they kill them step by step, but what they're really doing is being careful not to get injured. The fins made a difference, especially with the downward thrust underwater. He grabbed a Demirko foot and swam toward the bottom of the ocean with it and let go. Then he popped up and did it again. Then he did it again. The guy was coughing. Chris pulled him under again, came up for a breath, then boom, again. He gave the guy a little distance and waited. He knew there were various stages of drowning, and that a drowning person didn't often look like they were drowning. When they were scared of drowning, they yelled out and waved. But when they were actually drowning, everything shut down, except for the futile attempts at respiration. It was hard to tell if Demirko was drowning, but he wasn't going anywhere, and he wasn't doing the best job treading water at the moment. Chris floated on his back and looked around. There were splinters of sunlight on the hills of the Marin Headlands, but the sky looked ominous to the west, dark and swirly, the big surf apparently 24 hours away. When he looked back at Demirko, he couldn't find him. He kept his eye on where he thought he was and waited 5 minutes. Then he swam to the spot and had to search a bit before he found the guy, hunched forward, floating just below the surface. He waited a little longer, trying to size up the relative positioning of DeMirco to the shore. You'd think that with the tide peaking 4 hours ago, DeMirco would be going out, and it seemed he was. But did that mean high tide tomorrow morning would beach him right back at the cove, or what? Either way, it was time to get the fuck out of the ocean. He swam in, put his running gear back on, and filled the backpack with everything else, including DeMirco's phone and his sweaty clothes and shoes, unfortunately. He was exhausted when he got back up to the parking lot, but glad there were no cars at all, nor apparently any idiots milling around the beach in the rain. What he wanted to do was walk over to California Street and get on the bus, and then go home and go to bed. But it seemed best to run back through the Presidio the same way he came. They most likely wouldn't be zeroing in on a guy committing a homicide in the middle of a run. And the truth was, if you were out there anyway, you might as well finish it off. 34. In the wheelhouse. Bethany reached for a low forehand in the back corner of the squash court and didn't get the ball back, but she was putting on a good show. The other woman had more skill, and Bethany was forced to do most of the running, but she tried her hardest on every point, and by the third game, she was sweating profusely. Her teammates were on adjacent courts, and they were all wearing light blue t-shirts that had their individual names on them, and Bethany's front side was revealing itself impressively, both in mass and clarity, as she raced around the court and stretched into awkward positions to try to return shots. It was 8:30 Monday night, 10 hours since DeMirco. "You look like you're into this match," someone said. Chris looked up. A woman with a San Francisco Bay Club name tag was smiling at him. "It does get the hooks into you," he said, "especially this angle through the glass back wall." "So I take it you don't play then yourself," she said. "How come?" She was petite, early 30s, no mistaking her enthusiasm. "Why should I?" Chris said. "I'm fine just watching my friend." "Which one?" "The one waiting for the serve." "Oh, Bethany," the woman said. "She's great. Not at squash so much, but a lot of fun to talk to when I'm working the front desk." "You working it right now?" "I'm on a break. Today's my long day, noon to close." Chris stood up. "I'm Chris, by the way. Would you want to get a coffee or something afterward?" Bethany was real red in the face now and looked increasingly frustrated. She appeared to be losing most of the points. "Golly, could we be a little more forward, how about?" Hard to read, but at least she seemed amused. Chris said, "Till what time?" "Well, we shut the doors at midnight and I'm off at 12:30. It's up to you if you'd like to check back, but I'm thinking probably not. It's Kim, though." Soon Bethany and her opponent were shaking hands and they opened the door and came out of the court. Bethany walked past Chris without saying a word and returned 15 minutes later, showered and changed. "You're more of a battler than I realized," he said. "You have a temper." "I'm not a great sport," she said. "It's something I need to work on. But thank you so much for coming and watching my whole match." He said, "I'm a dodo bird sitting here, but I saw something you can do to improve." "No, Chris, with all due respect, I take lessons sometimes. I don't need you telling me how to play." Chris said, "What you do, you hit the ball higher up on the front wall, so it travels further back into the corners. That's what she was doing to you." "Damn it, Chris, I mean it. I'm not in the mood." "Your ball was landing short, where that line is across the floor, right in her wheelhouse." "Will you shut up?" Bethany's teammates, Phyllis and Jeff, from the dinner at her house, were nearby. Phyllis said, "Nice to see you again, Chris. How do you like our little sport?" "I think it's terrific," he said. "Tennis is better half for sure." Bethany had moved to another court to watch the end of Gloria's match. Jeff said, B was upset about a result. That and me trying to give her advice, that's what put her over the edge, Chris said. Don't worry about it, Jeff said. She's a terrible loser. Always takes her about an hour and then she's back to normal the rest of the night. Competition works in funny ways, Phyllis said. You see a side of someone you never imagined. They went to the Bighorn on Sansom, Bethany's team plus him, which he figured was how it would work. Chris thought the place was only so-so. The menu a cross between New Jersey Diner and California Fusion, and pricey. He sipped his beer, glad to be in a social situation, but fighting hard not to replay DeMirco in his head. The backpack was sitting in the trunk, too much to deal with after the morning, but needing to be addressed, the guy liable to wash up somewhere at any time. The team was discussing the matches, and Bethany was coming around laughing at certain things. Jeff and Gloria and Steve were doing most of the talking, and Phyllis and John chiming in. I had my guy 9-6 in the fifth, Steve said. Then I don't know what happened. What happened was you hit the 10 four times in the last 5 points, Jeff said. If you just kept your poise there, we would have won the overall match. Hold on, Jeff, John said. You lost 3-0 to your guy. Let's not get too critical. Okay, but I was playing number one, Jeff said. I wouldn't have let that guy off the hook 2 points away, is all I'm saying. Gloria said, Chris, we're sounding foolish here. How have you been? Fine, but the shop talk doesn't bother me a bit, Chris said. Makes me wish I had something as exciting going on. Well, you certainly look fit, Gloria said. What do you do? Mostly just run, which is boring. When I lived back east, I enjoyed tennis until my partner got mad at me. What happened? Phyllis said. Oh, I got in his business where I probably shouldn't have. He beat me 5 sets in a row one day, and I thought he was making bad line calls on top of it. I said you were beating me straight up. Why'd you need to make shaky calls? Steve said, so you got in his business by questioning his on-court character? No, I got in his business by offering my opinion of his personal life. He had a really nice, devoted girlfriend who would come to the court sometimes. He was cheating on her with his ex-wife. Chris noticed Bethany and Jeff shifting around. How did you know that? Phyllis said. He'd bring it up. Brag about it, Chris said, though he put it on the ex-wife that she couldn't get past him. What a son of a bitch, Gloria said. Yeah, what a crock of horseshit, John said. It's not like someone was putting a gun to his head, making him participate. Phyllis said, so what did you tell him? That if he wasn't going to stop doing it, then stop talking about it. Evidently, that hit a nerve because the guy never spoke to me again. Well, good for you, Gloria said. That is scum of the earth behavior. He should be shot, and the ex-wife too, for that matter. I agree, Phyllis said, but just find another partner then. Oh, I still play once in a while. But the other day I was watching some hackers and it was embarrassing. I realized that's how I look too. On the other hand, you guys all look good out there. That's very kind of you, Gloria said. But really? Absolutely, you're giving it your all, running around like chickens with your heads cut off. What can I say? You look like athletes. Gosh, just hearing it put like that is amazing, Phyllis said. Totally, Steve said. That's over the top, Chris, but we'll take it. We will, Bethany said, glaring at Chris. So where do you like to run? John said. The marina usually, down to Fort Point and back, Chris said. The scenery helps. And that's what you did today? Gloria said. Yeah, although today I actually repeated it twice. I was looking for a little extra. How far? John said. I'd say maybe 11, 12 total. I'm feeling it now, that's for sure. Bethany said, Jesus Christ, Chris, do you really think you should be out there trying to run 11 miles? Jeff said, B, take it easy. What's the big deal? Exactly, Phyllis said, why not? Bethany said, it's just, I don't know, increasing your intensity like that without building up to it. It seems unwise. I'll keep it in mind next time, Chris said. They were at their cars, and Bethany had said goodnight to everyone, including Jeff. She said, Chris, what got into you? You certainly know how to humiliate someone. What do you mean? The only one who might have raised an eyebrow was Jeff. My educated guess is he's the only teammate you're shtupping. My God, do you have to be so crude? While we're on the subject, it work out any better with him? Jeff? No. So, one more time. It's not me, my prognosis, whatever else. It isn't, she said. In fact, since we're being so honest here, Jeff wants to go to Arizona and have a talk with Kyle. Chris was digesting this. Bethany said, what? No, Chris said, I was trying to visualize how that'd go. I wouldn't mind being on hand to find out. Believe me, she said, it couldn't go well. Jeff might get hurt and I'd probably lose him as a friend. Kyle a tough guy then? Chris said. I already told you. Scary. He have a new wife, kids, anything? Chris said. A girlfriend, Bethany said, and I think she's expecting. Kyle ever ask you for an official divorce? No. Can we please change the subject? You're welcome to come over, if you'd like. Tell you the truth, Chris said, I'm pretty worn out. That 11 miles you scolded me for is starting to kick in. All right, then. I were you, Chris said, I'd tell Jeff to sit tight. Little baby coming into the picture, Kyle could get his priorities straight. Wouldn't surprise me if you didn't hear from him much going forward. Chris, Bethany said, you have no idea what you're talking about. 35. Thinking Vesuvios. Chris checked his watch and it was 12:10 and the Bay Club would be locked up, but he thought he may as well see what happens. Kim and another employee were straightening up the lobby and Kim saw Chris and let him in. What happened to Bethany? She said. We had a group meal. Plenty of laughs. I'm on the outside looking in, though. Kim worked it around. So I assume you're full, then. Oh, yeah, Chris said, but I love to eat. I can always force it. Kim smiled. In that case, I was thinking Vesuvio's, if that appeals to you. On Columbus? Yes, they're open until 2. Nah, it doesn't sound good. I'm going to call it a night. Oh, okay. Geez, I'm kidding, Chris said. Kim was eating like a horse, which motivated Chris, and he almost finished his veal scallopini. Dang, he said. Small individual like you. Kim said, I'm always famished when I get off work. It drives my family crazy. Everyone's constantly on diets. Can't beat a healthy metabolism, Chris said. I know, I've never had a weight problem. I feel guilty sometimes. So what's your story? He said. Nothing dramatic, if that's where you're going. I grew up in the city, and except for college in Northridge, I've been here my whole life. I grew up here too. My guess is you take most of your restaurants in the city. It's not that common to find 2 native San Franciscans at the same table. Tell me about it, she said. I love working at the gym, but no one's from here. Where'd you go to school? Chestnut Street's the same way, Chris said. It has its moments, but if you polled 100 people, maybe 2 would know the 49ers used to play at Kezar. The answer's Lowell High School. So did I, she said. What year? 92. Get out of here. My sister was 92. Oh, no. Did you know Leslie Stemple? Jesus. That's your sister? Yes. What's wrong now? What were you? Well, I was class of 2001. Wow, Chris said. You had another sister, right? In between? Yeah, Margie. She was 3 years behind Les. Jesus, Chris said. I remember her. That means you were like 8 years old then. And man, I actually remember you too. I'm not believing this. My God, she said, I remember you also. When you dropped Leslie off, Margie and I were all over her, wanting to hear everything. Well, that puts a damper on things, to say the least, Chris said. Serves me right for being truthful. What an idiot. What are you talking about? She said. I was going to try to maneuver you back to my place, except for a small detail emerges that you're my high school girlfriend's little sister. Unreal. Kim grimaced, taking it in. She said, I must say that wasn't an answer I was expecting. Chris said, that's my fault then, and I didn't mean I'm not enjoying your company. You're a good kid, that's obvious. You say kid, she said, but would it occur to you I worry about my biological clock ticking? You mean that kind of kid? No, not that kind. No one spoke for a while. You know what, Kim said? If we hadn't made this connection, there'd be no way I'd go home with you tonight. Oh, now I can, if you want me to. You mean fire up the Scrabble board, Chris said, since you don't have to worry about any moves being put on you? You're funny, she said. Chris made coffee and they sat on the couch and flipped around late night TV. Carnal Knowledge was on, where Jack Nicholson and Art Garfunkel swap girlfriends, Anne Margaret being one, and the other a familiar actress Chris couldn't place, but all of them so young. He muted the sound and said, I ask a few questions, but you do most of the talking, okay? And if I start falling asleep, elbow me. Kim tucked her feet under herself and got comfortable. I'll ask the first one for you, she said. What's Leslie doing? That was number two, Chris said. The first one, are your parents still alive? I really like them. Mom passed away, but Dad's hanging in there. Leslie lives in Walnut Creek. Yeah? She has two teenage sons. They've both been in a little trouble. Les has had a fair number of men in and out. Jeez, who's the father? Two different guys. The first you probably knew, Tim Bogaloo. Holy Toledo, the basketball player? She ended up with that guy? Seems like everyone knew that. You must be out of the loop entirely. I am until they ask for those alumni donations. When I give them something, they don't acknowledge it, but they do solicit me earlier the next year. Well, she said, you have your 25th reunion coming up. You should go. Leslie's been talking about it. To be honest, Chris said, on my list of things to do, that's off the bottom. I could go with you. It would be so much fun, Kim said. She moved next to him, and without thinking too hard, he put his arm around her. Chris said, your dad's still in the same house? No, a retirement complex on Van Ness. They had something bad happen and sold the house in 04. Something bad what? Chris said. Oh, I would always ask them not to, but they were driving up to visit Margie. She lived in Seattle at the time. My dad was stubborn. He insisted on driving straight through and sleeping at rest stops. They got robbed and beaten up pretty badly at one in the middle of the night near Bend, Oregon. Fuck. It was touch and go for a while, especially with my mom. When they recovered, they put the house on the market right away and moved to an apartment. It wasn't rational, but they felt vulnerable. God damn it. On a brighter subject, Kim said, how come you're not involved with anyone? Or are you? What happened to the guy that beat them up? Chris said. There were two. They caught them the next day trying to use my dad's credit card. There was no way my parents were going back up there to testify, so they pled guilty to a watered-down charge like they do and served 90 days in the county jail. Motherfucker. What else besides the house? Well, Mom seemed a little slower mentally. We never knew if it was early dementia setting in or the incident. Chris said, well, now I probably can't sleep. Which isn't the worst thing, I guess. Kim said, you know what, Chris? You look absolutely exhausted. Please go in and I'll leave. I'm good right here, he said. I'm actually afraid of having a bad dream tonight. a serious bad dream or one because it didn't work out with Bethany. She leave the squash club with various guys, Chris said, in your experience, besides that guy Jeff? Oh yes, she's very much out there, Kim said. That's what I figured. A lot of mystery to her. Made more complicated, no doubt, by that body, Kim said, which you were studying carefully during the match. Chris said, don't you think most of them hit the ball too low on the front wall, though? She got mad when I told her that. Probably. So are you involved with anyone, Chris, or you just fool around? No. You? Well, I've broken up with some nice guys. I can't put my finger on it. Let me tell you something, Chris said. You're never going to find that perfect package. Something's always a little off. You accept that, you move forward. Interesting, Dr. Phil, she said. So how come you aren't settled down? Chris said, those two guys, anyone ever follow up what happened to them after they got out of jail? No, that wouldn't make sense. Why would we want to? You're right, he said. But if it were me, I couldn't help it. I'd be curious. 36. Extra 20. When Chris woke up, it was almost noon. At some point, Kim must have set him up with a pillow and blanket, and he'd slept surprisingly well on the couch. She left a note that she had to go to work and thanking him for the interesting evening. He checked the Chronicle online to see if a washed-up body had made the news. Nothing so far. He had the backpack to deal with and the phone. Was it logical to send a couple texts from the guy's phone or make a silent call from, say, the beach at Santa Cruz? On the one hand, you might throw off the timeline and geography. On the other, they might track you and arrest you then and there if DeMirco had been reported missing and they were onto his phone. So forget that. He opened the back of the phone and removed the battery and with a small screwdriver pulled out the circuit board or whatever it was. There were no doubt easier options, but the Sonoma County dump would do the job, and a bird in the hand was better than fooling around. He put the backpack in a garbage bag, fins, goggles, and all, threw in the phone and tied it up and put it in the trunk. He stuffed an old rug he was tired of into the back seat area, so the backpack wasn't the only thing he'd be dumping, and drove up there. The dump was north of Petaluma, lush green hills all around reminding you of Ireland, and it was easy to miss the turn. The guy at the booth asked for his driver's license, and Chris said he didn't have it with him. The guy said he needed something to verify he was a Sonoma County resident, so Chris handed him an extra $20 and drove in. The operation gave you confidence, with giant payloaders gobbling up your trash almost as quickly as you dumped it. In fact, you had to watch your step not to get run over by one. He stopped for gas on East Washington, bought a donut at the convenience store, devoured part of it, and put the phone battery and circuit board into the bag with the rest of the donut, and deposited it in the gas station's yellow dumpster, which took care of everything for now. Hopefully. He was thinking he'd have a hearty breakfast at Mel's on Lombard in the city, but he found himself angling once again toward the Mill Valley exit on 101 South, and he settled in at Starbucks. He'd made both the original and the revised lists sitting here. The original the day after Steiner gave him his news. The revised was 2 days after Donnie, which was the day he'd met Allison. It sure seemed like a long time ago. Number one, Ray. Two, Donnie with an asterisk. Three, Riesling. Four, Brigida problem. Five, Ike's guy. Six, Chip. Seven, Eric Mossman's guy. And the asterisk, code signaling complete for Donnie. He had an envelope that had been sitting on the front seat of his car. No particular reason except he was mad about it. It was his health insurance statement that when he read the fine print, charged him for tests last month that he'd never received. It was no money out of his pocket since it was covered by his policy, but you wondered how many millions of people got hit with similar errors and never noticed. How could they charge him for something that never happened? Wasn't that criminal? He wrote his updated list on the back of that envelope. Ray, number one, no. Two, Donnie with a symbol. Three, Thad. Four, Chip with a symbol. Five, Jerry Smith. Six, Ike's guy. Seven, Brigida situation with an asterisk. Eight, Leslie Parents. Nine, Dog guy with a question mark. 10, Pocatello driver, double symbol. 11, Kyle, triple symbol. And the code, single symbol, complete. Double symbol, complete but mistake. Triple symbol, good enough. In sizing up the new list, Chris wasn't sure if he was up to it. All that work and stress to get to this point, and look what was still ahead. If he had to go with two, he'd say Thad and Smith, since Thad involved family and Smith killed someone. That left Ike's neighbor from hell on the sidelines for now, along with whoever assaulted Leslie's parents and the guy who threw the dog into traffic. He'd added that guy to the list because he'd gotten more worked up about it as the story unfolded. You had a 22-year-old kid on drugs from a good old boy San Francisco family, and it looked like he'd be getting probation tops, which was appalling. One thing he decided, he better not watch the news anymore, or for that matter, meet any new people who were liable to tell you their life story. You'd almost certainly end up expanding the list. He walked up the hill to the Mill Valley Library and read the Jerry Smith return emails from the high schools, which he couldn't concentrate on last time because he was in the middle of DeMirco. There were four now, two from school administrators blowing him off and two from alumni coordinators, one at Montgomery High School and one at Piner. Montgomery was the more organized, and the contact person directed him to a tidy website that had all known alumni listed, and Smith was not on it. The Piner person said there was nothing they could email, but they had a master binder with a database, one in the office and one in the Santa Rosa main library. Before he got off the computer, he looked around for fitness industry conventions and trade shows that Thad might attend. It was a bit overwhelming. There was a big one in Oklahoma City in May, but there were others all over the place too. He set up another Gmail account and wrote the sales department of the Oklahoma Convention, which was called World Fitness Expo 2012. He said he was starting a business in Boise, and he'd be interested in attending if he knew there were going to be other Idaho fitness people there. Chris hated to reverse direction and drive up to Santa Rosa, but he figured it was worth a shot with Jerry Smith, and if nothing else, he'd be narrowing things down. He got hungry on the way and stopped at In-N-Out in Runner Park, though he wished he hadn't, because it was so crowded he had to park in a furniture store parking lot down the road. While he was walking to the restaurant, the phone rang and it was Allison. "Chris," she said, "we've been thinking about you." Chris said, "Really? In what way?" "Know what you need to do," she said. "Let go of those defenses. That's why you're so cynical." "I'm cynical," he said, "A, because I haven't put enough distance on our little excursion, and B, that you calling out of the blue means you want something." "Fine, I won't even tell you why I'm calling." "Not to change the subject," he said, "but how's my brother these days? All recovered?" "Floyd is great," she said. "He's coming out." "Oh, Jesus. That what you were calling about then?" "No. I'm playing an open mic tomorrow. The Red Raider on Polk Street. It starts at 8. Can you come?" "You know what? That one in Pocatello, I'm going to have that be it as far as open mics," Chris said. Come on, Chris, you can walk. We passed right by it on the way to your house that night when your friend met you in the lobby. It would be so nice to have you there. We'll see, he said, and hung up. The Pioneer High School directory in the reference section of the Santa Rosa Library had a Jerry Smith, class of 1976, listed at 4820 Mill Station Road in Sebastopol. The directory had last been updated in 2003. Chris Googled around for the assessor's parcel number, entered it in the Sonoma County Land Record search engine, and boom, Jerry and Suzanne Smith were the current owners of the property. He asked the librarian if they kept old high school yearbooks, and she led him into a side room and opened a glass cabinet with a key. It was a surprisingly organized collection from the various Santa Rosa high schools going back to the 1950s. He found Smith's class of 76 yearbook, took it to the Xerox machine, and made a copy of his graduation picture, thinking it looked a lot like the one on the microfilm at the SF Main Library that was part of the original IJ article. Sebastopol was 15 minutes away between Santa Rosa and the coast. Chris took Highway 12 into the center of town, turned on Regal Road, and took a left on Mill Station. Sebastopol was once apple orchard country, known for the sweet Gravenstein, but vineyards had replaced most of the orchards over the last 20 years. Not quite prime Napa Valley conditions because of the marine layer, but excellent for supplemental grapes and lucrative. Chris did a double take when he saw Smith's property. There was a large modern house, easily 4,000 square feet, set on a hill surrounded by several acres of vineyards. He could see a pool, a court of some kind, and a barn that looked like it had been converted to a guest house. Chris thinking the barn was all he'd ever need. How could a deadbeat 28-year-old drunk driver end up here? He either married money or came into it, or somehow was successful himself, which would be even worse. He was clearly enjoying the good life, while the Mossman family, what was left of them, quite likely was not. On the way out of town, there were signs for the Sebastopol Spring Parade and Apple Blossom Festival this weekend. Chris thought, what the hey? Let me show up at that. He got home and put on the 6 o'clock news while he made a sandwich. A blonde reporter was doing a live remote from Ocean Beach, her hair being whipped around, and Chris stopped in his tracks, his mind racing. But the reporter was talking about the big offshore storm that had arrived as predicted and was churning up huge swells. There were fire department trucks on the beach, the firemen watching the ocean with binoculars, because dozens of surfers were in the water, taking advantage of the conditions. Chris watched the report to conclusion, switched channels, and caught the end of a similar report, and then checked online. So far, nothing about a beached Croatian. He took a shower and headed over to Weatherby's. Shep said, "My man, I saw you here last week with the black guy. It looked kind of intense there, so I didn't want to bother you." Chris said, "Ray, he lays on the act, but he's got a good heart. I've known him since junior high school. And last we spoke, if memory serves, you felt like you had an issue." "Yeah, a guy on me to an extent, but that got resolved." "Shit, you mean definitively resolved?" "I guess. There's a Part B guy, but pretty sure he'll be a non-factor now that Part A got handled." "Shimini Christmas. Holy smokes. The main thing tugging at me now, though," Chris said, "I met a woman I think I could marry. Sounds insane, of course, after one date. Well, that's how it can work, though, Shep said. You just know, or so they say. What makes it more complicated, Chris said, is two things. The first of which is, I can't sleep with her. She's a little sister of someone I used to know. I hear you there, brother. I'm not sure I'd be able to either. What's the second complication? I won't be around, Chris said. Oh, yeah, Shep said. I almost forgot about that. Sorry. I try to forget about it, too. I'm even successful sometimes. How long has it been now, Shep said, since they told you? Well, it was a Monday, a month after the Niners lost to Seattle, which I unfortunately ended up at. So, let's see. Man, Shep said, don't remind me, the Seahawks of all teams. What keeps eating at me is why they'd kept letting those guys kneel during the anthem. No backbone in the ownership. Chris said, I'm thinking February 20th. So we got March 20th, and what are we now, April 6th? Well, 7 weeks, give or take. Shep said, I probably already asked you this, but you supposed to be deteriorating yet? Maybe. I threw away all the what to expect paperwork they gave me on purpose. I did a hard workout yesterday, kind of a cross-training thing, and got yelled at by my doctor's secretary. I felt decent afterwards, though. Shep said, you don't think there could be any chance they fucked up? Hard to imagine, Chris said. Though I won't lie, it hasn't crossed my mind once or twice lately. What'd you say when you went in with that first place? Without getting graphic and intestinal something or other? Yeah. How's that coming along? Chef said. It's gone. The symptoms, anyway. So maybe you had the goddamn flu and some moron mixed up a test sample or entered the wrong patient in the computer. Chris said, I give that possibility 5%. Up from zero, admittedly. The thing is, I don't want to know. What the hell are you talking about? Meaning, I don't want to go in and get my death sentence reaffirmed, which it almost surely would be. And if it were miraculously overturned, that wouldn't be the greatest either at this point. Shep stared at Chris with his mouth open. Chris said, it would actually kind of screw things up. Shep said, uh-huh. Crazy as that sounds, Chris said. When he got home, he was going to call Kim, but he found a rerun of a reality show he liked, so he waited until it was over. The show was about a blended family, and in this episode, one of the teenage daughters builds up to asking the stepfather if she can call him dad, because he has been there for her more than the real dad has. Several of the characters end up crying, and Chris cried too. I was hoping you'd call, Kim said. That last night wasn't it. Chris said, there's this performance tomorrow I told someone I'd be at. Nothing in it for you, though. I love live performances, she said. Well, okay then, if you insist. Kim said, I saw Bethany tonight at the gym, and I mentioned you. You did? She said if it ever got serious, I needed to ask you about your skeleton in the closet. That was how she phrased it. Fuck. Chris said, what gave her the idea it could get serious? I told her I wanted it to, Kim said. Chris was silent. Uh-oh, Kim said. Does that change me coming tomorrow night? No, we're good, he said. And he gave her the information and got off. 37. Free radical. Chris woke up Wednesday with a lot of energy. There were familiar smells in the air when it was going to be a warm spring day, and this was one of them. People were walking around the neighborhood in shorts, rare for a morning in San Francisco. He felt so good that he repeated his run to the bridge and back twice, the way he described it in the restaurant the other night. He was tired but exhilarated at the end. Chris was thinking the DeMirco workout may have upped his fitness level. After lunch, he called Bethany in the office. "What skeleton in the closet?" he said. "Chris, I only know Kim from checking me in at the squash club, but she's a sweetheart. It was something I needed to say." "Okay, listen, I'll buy you a drink when you get off work. I want to ask you something." "I guess we could," she said. "Just one, though, because we have another league match tonight." "I get it. You're in training," Chris said. At 5:35, Bethany came out of the medical office building, Steiner right with her. He saw Chris, shook his head, and kept going. "Billy's turning into a grumpy old man," he said. "Okay, let's not keep going there," Bethany said. "Did you have somewhere in mind?" Chris knew a bistro in Laurel Village a few blocks away. At this hour, you'd see private school moms from Presidio Heights dressed in L.L. Bean-type gear in there getting blitzed. "So Kim," Bethany said when they were set up, "I can't wait to hear where that one came from." Chris said, "She picked up on my appreciation of your match, actually. Funniest thing, it turns out I knew her sister years ago." "Well, you have to be frank with her, Chris. She's hung up on you. That's pretty obvious. People look up to their older sister's friends. So that part might be artificially induced," he said. "Either way, things are haywire, like I'm being punished for something." "Your diagnosis you're referring to?" "Not that. I'd kill to be able to pleasure you, but you're not into it. And then this new person, who maybe would be into it, I'm not sure I could consummate the relationship." "Wow," Bethany said. "All I can tell you is, I've given my opinion. It's not completely about you, Chris, even though I know it feels like it is." He said, "That's actually why I wanted to talk to you. Someone said maybe I was nursing the flu, and they fucked up in the lab." "Is this someone a medical individual?" she said. "He tends bar." "You know something? You need to limit your medical discussions to trained experts." Chris said, "You mean like the oncologist Billy wanted me to see? Even though they can't show me one patient like me they've cured?" "You know exactly what I'm talking about," Bethany said. "I ran another 11 today," Chris said. "It wasn't that bad. Unlikely as it is, I think I'm getting stronger." "You're making me really angry. Is that what you want?" she said. Chris said, "Near the end with my dad, I had to take him to the emergency room a couple times. Gave me a chance to observe the activities. Everyone, including the ER docs, was on the computer at least half the time. It does make you wonder." "Whether someone made an error?" she said. "Chris, I understand you grasping for any ray of hope. But no. That's what I figured. Just thought I'd bring it up." Bethany took a minute. "If you don't mind me asking, though, who else knows besides your bartender friend?" "Besides you and Billy and the lab person? No one. The bartender, Shep, I blurted it out to when I was in shock. He's been a good confidant. I almost told someone else at what seemed like a natural moment. In fact, did tell them, but she didn't react well, so I told her, take it easy, I was joking." Bethany said, "Well, maybe you should start leveling with a few more people, rather than harboring all the stress yourself." "Good point," Chris said. "When I get to where I can only run 10 miles and not a foot more, that's what I'll do." "Chris, fuck you." "Now, there you go. That's the passion we've been looking for. All you gotta do, convey that to Kyle." "You know what?" she said. "Fuck you." Polk Street was changing, Chris was thinking. it wasn't as gay as it used to be when it felt like an extension of the Castro. There were upscale bars and restaurants popping up, the vibe different than Chestnut, and that you had less of the college sweatshirt crowd, though everyone was young and seemed well off, the way they were jumping in and out of cabs when they probably didn't have to be. The Red Raider had been around for years, and if it was reinvigorated by the surrounding activity, you wouldn't know it. Chris got there at 7:45, ordered an Irish coffee, and was just about the only one in the joint. Right around 8, everyone showed up. Allison had on very tight jeans and a lacy top and looked nice, especially compared to the other performers who were shuffling in. Monica introduced Chris to Henry, a surprise. "A pleasure to meet you, sir," Henry said. "The two ladies have spoken quite highly of you." It took Chris a little getting used to. He assumed Henry was a street kid with pants falling down and a tattoo on his neck. But here was a polished, easygoing fellow with a steady smile and a touch of a West Indian accent. Chris said, "How are they? As roommates, they clean up?" "Man, you know that," Henry said. "I never saw two people so oblivious to a mess. So I take care of it myself. It's worth it. I enjoy the company." Monica was holding Henry's arm. "He exaggerates big time," she said. Chris looked up and there was Kim. He gave her a peck on the cheek and introduced the others as his friends from Berkeley. Allison was tuning her guitar and stood up and thanked Kim for coming, but at the same time was scrutinizing her, which irritated Chris and made him want to leave right then. The surprising thing was the whole shebang was much worse than the one in Pocatello. Tired chord progressions you'd heard 100 times, corny lyrics, and everyone so serious, like they were compelled to make a grand statement. The only one any good was Allison. Her songs were just enough outside the formula, and she had the best voice in the house. "I heard her play one of these in a small town," Chris said to Kim when it was over. "Here we have San Francisco, big cutting-edge music scene supposedly, and most of this was tough to take." "Your friend really is talented, though," Kim said. "I was kind of blown away by her, actually." Monica came over to their table. "Chris, you won't take credit, but Al really has been focused since the trip. You've been a big influence." "She's coming along," he said. "There's a pizza place," Monica said. "You guys are joining us, right?" Kim said, "Unfortunately, I can't, but thank you for including me." Monica was talking to someone else, and Chris said, "Why not?" "I open tomorrow, Chris. I have to get up at 4. "Ah." Kim said, "Bethany was in the club tonight before I left. She said she saw you earlier. Also, what trip?" "You know something," Chris said? "Bethany's starting to get on my nerves. I confronted her on the skeleton in the closet comment." "And how did she respond?" "Just that I don't open up enough, in her opinion, that it would be unfair in a serious relationship." "What did you say?" "I told her she has to start cultivating her own garden. She didn't like hearing that." "And what was the trip Monica was referring to?" Kim said. "Not something I'd recommend. I had to go to Idaho, so Allison wanted to come along for the ride. She brought Monica, and it was pretty strange." "Do you have something with Allison?" "Not that type of thing," Chris said. He walked her to her car. Kim said, "Can I make you dinner tomorrow night?" He gave it a moment. "I'm thinking no." "Not tomorrow or no?" "Probably no," he said. At the pizza place, Allison said, "Are you just saying that? Or I really am getting my act together." "I would say it anyway," Chris said, "but in this case, it's true." "Well, so what's my next step?" "You got to make some videos," Chris said. "Got to be tight, your best stuff. You stick them on YouTube. You never know. That's how they found Justin Bieber, apparently, if that counts. And then it would promote them how?" Come on, you have to figure that out. My guess is you play the dumb game, commenting on everyone else and liking shit, so you start getting liked and linked back to. Allison said, okay, and off topic, that girl Kim, she's a little cutie. Oh, Chris said. They finished eating and were outside the place. Monica said she and Henry were stopping off somewhere, and they said goodbye, and Allison asked Chris if she should come over. That'd be wrong for about 75 reasons, he said. But what can you do? They walked there, Chris not crazy about carrying Allison's guitar, but thinking he should, and this time they got down to business right away. One reason you sounded better, he said, looking up at Allison, his hands on her hips, her eyes closed. You work some of that fake country out of your voice. Did I? Yeah, it was more pure. Also, this is how I envisioned you at Floyd's. Well, I fucked Floyd. Just like this. I saw you doing it, Chris said. I wanted you to, she said. I was hoping you would. Fuck you or see you? See me. Do you see me now, Chris? He asked her what she meant exactly, but she stopped answering. Later, Chris said, well, what do you know? I wouldn't have put money on that occurring. I'm glad it did, Allison said. And I guess glad to get out of the way before my brother shows up, he said. For your information, she said, I'm not thinking about anyone else right now. Can you take a shower with me? It was a nice experience. She was tender and serious in there, and Chris felt bad he'd made that comment. He lingered for a while, and when he got out, Allison was on the couch with a cup of tea and the TV on. Gosh, someone drowned in those waves, she said. It just felt like that might happen. It was 2 a.m, the late-night local newscast being replayed. Chris said, what? It's off now, but they were at the Cliff House. They didn't say much except that they found a body. You know we have a big ocean storm going, right? Yeah, he said. A friend of mine, she said, he surfs. He's been on a high. But people get in trouble. They don't anticipate the awesome power of the ocean. Chris said, they show the guy or woman or whoever? No. They only said some people were having dinner, saw something out the window of the restaurant. You know how the restaurant part extends over the water? At first they thought it was a seal, but it was too white. Chris said, well, okay. Well, those things happen, I guess. But racing through it in his head, looking for some mistake he'd made. Do you want me to leave? She said. I can hook up with Monica. She and Henry are staying in the city. I can get a taxi. No, don't go, Chris said. Let me ask you something, though. Any aspect of me in worse shape than when you first met me? Chris, it was great tonight. I mean that. Well, no, what I'm getting at is, have I changed? My pallor, the way I speak, move, look, anything? Well, yes, you look a little thinner. I do? God damn it. What a strange reaction, Chris. I'll tell you what, let me see what's happening with your eyes. She brought a standing lamp closer and had him lean back. Nice and white, your diet is obviously prudent, and I'm not seeing a lot of free radical activity. Yeah, right, Chris said. What a bunch of bull. I know a little about Oriental medicine, she said. There's a logical body flow, everything is connected, and you can tell a good deal about a person through simple observation. Let's see your tongue. You appear quite fit, Chris. What are your concerns? Well, nothing to back it up. Just that I might have something wrong that I don't know about. See, now this is the thing which I've tried to impress upon you. You're not balanced. Therefore, you're not calm, and you develop anxious thought patterns. Not to mention the cynical stuff. She had him put his legs up and began massaging the soles of his feet. He said, dang, that feels good. If I had something wrong, it might show up in my feet too? It absolutely would, Allison said. I have a friend, he got poked in the eye, where he couldn't open it for a few days. I was doing his feet and he yelled out when I worked on a certain spot. I looked that spot up on the chart, and that exact thing was for eye. What else is on the chart? Chris said. All your organs, everything. Chris said. How about penis? Can they do something there? What did you have in mind in particular? She said. I don't know. Tune it up, enlarge it, that kind of thing. Nope. I'm sorry, Chris. That I can't do. I didn't think so. Not permanently, anyway. Temporarily, I can, though. Oh, yeah? Uh-huh. Chris got up late and ran, not giving it a very good effort. He felt Demirko behind him part of the way and then saw him fluttering toward those rocks, something he alarmingly hadn't thought of. Could you leave DNA on a guy when you tugged on him and most likely fingernailed him in the ocean? When he got back, Allison was not only still there, but standing in the kitchen, waiting for a piece of toast to pop up. Nude. Jesus, God almighty, Chris said. What are you doing? People can see in. I close the shades, Allison said. Is it such a problem? What are you again? Chris said. 25, 26? Yep, she said. Well, you have a grace period, is what I'm saying. Just so you don't take things for granted. Thank you for that wisdom. If you were 45, he said, you might be a bit more discriminating, whereas right now, admittedly, I'm not finding any specific issues. Allison said, Floyd's driving. He should be here tonight. You gotta be kidding me. He'll be residing with Henry and the whole gang? Yeah. Listen, why don't you jump in the shower and by then I'll be fully awake. Awake? You know. You sure? Two Sealies the same day? I want that. Fine. You do what you have to do, then beat it on out of here, he said. He spent the afternoon checking news updates on the body that washed up at the Cliff House. After a few hours, they identified it as Grigoriev Petroyevikov of Santa Clara. Chris was relieved for about 20 minutes until the Mercury News added a photo to its news story, which was of a smiling Demirko. He had hoped the little guy might stay out at sea a while longer and end up down near Half Moon Bay, but it was what it was. He figured he could sit around waiting for further developments, or he could go over to the Booker Lounge and have a couple drinks. When he walked in, his old newspaper crony, Rich Tomlinson, was sitting at the bar talking to Booker. Rich, Chris said. This is where we left off like a month ago. Same stool and everything. It wasn't quite cocktail hour. It was just the three of them. Chrissy, I'm glad you're back. Rich got up, staggered a little, and embraced him. Have you committed any homicide since last time? Chris was stunned by the question, felt his heart race. Started to say something and then caught himself, remembering now the hypothetical discussion they'd had. It's a fair question, Chrissy, Booker said. If I recall, you inquired whether bullets recovered at a crime scene was traceable. Chris said, well, are they? You never did get me the definitive answer. And they all laughed. Nothing wrong with plotting to whack someone over a few beverages, Rich said. In fact, it's probably therapeutic. Chris saw Demirko's picture flash on the TV behind the bar. He tried to look away and listen to Booker, who was saying, you got that right. We all human beings. The difference, though, between us talking junk and them up in Pelican Bay? Restraint, brother. Good point, Rich said. A news reporter was interviewing players at a tennis court now. Probably that park in San Jose. Chris was thinking they piece it together quick. The segment ended with a police hotline number, which implied they didn't buy the guy being in the ocean in his underwear by choice. Chris said, Any thoughts on how you take care of someone who was on vacation, staying in a hotel and such? Damn, you crack me up, Rich said. I'm loving this, though. Well, one thing, don't go in the hotel. Or outside it, neither, Booker said. Before, during, or after. Cameras up the wazoo if the establishment is halfway respectable. The thing about killing an out-of-towner, Rich said, you have to expect more heat. The cops work those hard. They protecting the business owners, and I don't blame them, Booker said. If the lounge started losing revenue because some dude from Milwaukee got hit on Chestnut Street, I'd go out and track down the motherfuckers myself. Rich said, remember the one about 15 years ago where the guy and his girlfriend got shot to death near Japantown? Vaguely, Chris said. Rich said, young couple from Nebraska. Lily white, corn-fed, supposedly here sightseeing. You have your Japantown featured on the tourist map. But then you have projects 3 blocks away. Chris thinking, yeah, Ray lives in one of them. Rich said, I was on the crime beat then at the Examiner. SFPD used more manpower trying to solve it than any case I remember. It didn't even matter that the fresh-faced Nebraskans were on a drug buy. Booker said, how you know that? A little old-fashioned investigative journalism. The cops didn't want to go there. They were working the PR angle. The mayor came on TV every day for a while, assuring tourists the city is safe and justice will be served, and look how we're making sure. And it backfired on them because they come up empty, Booker said. Exactly, Rich said. You remember it then. Heard about it, Booker said. How it went down and such. Christ, really? Rich said. And we'll be leaving it at that, Booker said. Chris said, I'm not seeing, though, how that'd apply to my situation. Well, for starters, Rich said, taking care of it in a dangerous neighborhood wouldn't be the worst idea. Chris was wondering if there were many of those in Oklahoma City and how you'd get someone to go there. Booker said, I might actually agree with you on that. Be putting more angles in circulation. Throw them off track. Okay, fair enough, Chris said. And what about a guy living in a small town? How would you approach that one? Chrissy, I'm getting a kick out of you, Rich said. You're messing with us pretty convincingly. That, or you're a closet homicidal maniac. Chris said, all it is, I've got these two guys right now. They shouldn't be walking around. Booker put his hands on the bar and took his time. My man, I believe your heart is in the right place, but you follow it too close, you may not be liking what you see.